So today is a Chinese New Year. How you say in Chinese Happy New Year?
新年快乐.
Once again?
新年快乐.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody can learn Chinese. It take few hundred years and you can speak perfectly. But anyway, as our Shil Gurudev used to say, it is all about heart-to-heart transaction. So when we are celebrating something, just like Chinese New Year, actually, what's the idea? What's the idea behind celebration? What is celebration? So we get together, we cook, not for ourselves, for others, for Krishna, and we enjoy together. So what is the famous New Year song in China? What is this song about?
What is it about? It's like Happy New Year.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah, so.
We're singing, dancing, celebrating.
Yes. See, this is exactly why we're here. And that's exactly what Krishna does. Krishna is incredibly celebratable person. But more than him is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because, you know, I spoke today with Goswami Maharaj this morning. And I said to him, so what was the conversation with some devotee? And Goswami Maharaj, I told that devotee something that blowing his mind after 35 years being in Krishna consciousness. And that devotee were a former guru, big monk, big preacher, and now he's listening to Goswami Maharaj's talks. So I said, what did you tell him that blow his mind? You can translate in Chinese. And they all understand English?
No, they have
Oh my God. Your Bluetooth is on. Okay, think of this. You're a very exalted soul, and you are spiritually very advanced, but still there's some things will excite you. What does that mean? That means, first of all, spiritual life is really inconceivable. It has no limit. It has no end. It's not like you reach a particular point, now you're like done. No. You might reach a particular point of consciousness where you're free from matter, but that's your true journey. That's where it begins. Your true journey begins when you're free from matter absolutely. There's no single drop of matter in your mind. And then some divine things start making sense to you. So Rupa Goswami is explaining, when somebody very sick with his liver, whatever is sweet tastes bitter. That's actually an exam in India. When you go to doctor and you tell yellow eyes, he give you some sweet piece of sugar, and when you say sugar, you're like, oh, so bitter. That is like material consciousness. In material consciousness, whatever is not really substantial, whatever has no value, it tastes very sweet. But some true spiritual things, people have no taste for them. So our number one thing is to acquire spiritual taste. How the taste will come back to us? It will come back to us gradually. It's not like immediately. You don't go to Krishna consciousness. You don't start immediately tasting spiritual things. But as you associate with devotees of a higher type, you start developing higher taste for things. Even like after being sometimes, you have appreciation for kirtan, prasadam, and you understand kirtan is not ordinary singing. Prasadam is not ordinary food. It's a sacred singing, sacred food, divine. Then when you feel the difference, you understand, okay, now I understand what's spiritual, what's non-spiritual. But this is very beginning stage of your realization. The true stage of deep realization, you know, comes as like, it's like, you know, kindergarten, school, university. And after university, you think, I know everything. So after university, you pull out to some real job and they tell you, forgot everything you've learned in university. They say, why? Well, because your knowledge is not practically realized. We'll show you how to do it. I'm sure as a pilot, you understand that, right? There's a big difference between computer fly and helicopter and real one. And you would think it's more experienced pilot. His experience, not because he can fly this, because he can see things that you cannot see with ordinary eyes. He can model situations that you cannot, you know, even imagine will happen to you. So a lot of the plane crashes happens that people think, oh, everything is fine, but that's not like, you know, so it's always something where the experienced pilot can fly, nobody else. So speaking about spiritual life is, Goswami Maharaj has a very good video which calls take me to a pilot. See, because in a lot of the cases, people say, well, spiritual life is totally intuitive. You know, like there's always guru who tell you there's no need guru. There's always book to tell you there's no, you don't need to read book. All you have to do is just like take deep breaths, imagine some spiritual thing, open your heart and just feel it. So in Goswami's video, there's a guy who's a pilot of the plane, and just imagine like a full plane, Chiang Mai, Shanghai. There's like 500 Chinese going on vacation, really have like 3 to 5 days to enjoy, and they have to come back, they got a return ticket. And think of this, some great beautiful looking pilot coming up from his pilot cabin and tell, hey, you know what, actually, I think flying is always intuitive. It's within everyone. Everyone can fly. In fact, today I'm going to fly first time. You know, just like take the deep breath, enjoy the air, take one, take those things and try to take over the ground and just fly and fly and fly. And don't look at any desk, you know, just like land in Chiang Mai. Let the destiny carry you there. Like you. Sorry, I think I have to go to bathroom, and you're like, and you start like drilling hole to get out, right? And like gradually, all these 500 Chinese who bought a ticket, they just stand up, pick up their bag, and they jump without without stairs. They're all jumping out. Why? Because there's some crazy guy who tell, as much as flying intuitive, you don't really need to learn anything about. There's no need experience. There's no need school, there's no need education. All you have to do is just like, hey, let's fly it. So if flying or medical operation is that significantly important, you think about how important for us is to get in the proper plane with a proper pilot who's the guru. You know, get the buckle seat belt because, you know, the instruction of Air Force tell you that all the precautions written by a lot of people. So you think, oh, why do I have to buckle my seatbelt? But if you don't, you know, imagine you can fly inside the plane very easy. So all these things are matter, and they sound like very amateur. Why do I need this? Why do I need that? Everything is matter when you're flying towards divinity. Everything is matter when you're flying towards immortality. And you have to fly over mountains of your ego. Just like when you fly to India, sometimes you see huge mountains. It's like your ego. It's a very difficult journey to overcome your ego. It's like claiming your own ego step by step. But it doesn't really mean that you're in spiritual reality yet. Just flying over your ego, it's almost impossible. When you look at your mountain of your ego, you think, I cannot give up my ego just on my own. I need somebody to take me there. But then you'll realize there's also destination. There's a whole world which has peripheral part and the center part, and they land you like welcome to, you know, blah blah blah, international airport. So that's part of the spiritual journey. As much as you realize that you just can't fly yourself, you have to have another realization. Even while you're flying, as somebody flying, that there's rules. There's a way you seat, you know, buckle your seat belt, you know, you don't start smoking during the flight, you know, because it's illegal. You know, you take a particular food, and you know, there's a way you should behave. So when I was traveling to India 25 years ago, you know, there used to be charter planes that go to India. Half of it would be seat and half of it would be for merchandise, because Russians would fly to India, buy all the leather jackets, everything sell on the market. It was like a crazy time. So when we were flying there, it was like very, very old, bad planes. They already been like sign off. And they were not properly balanced. Nothing was like safety. So the journey to India was like really bad, because everybody get drunk and like smoke. Think you're sitting on a plane where everybody like redneck type of people, you know, merchants, they buy stuff, they sell, they all smoke, they all drink, and like, and you were like there, and they're like, hey, you want some glass of vodka? You're like, glass of vodka? No, thank you. So I would go take my sleeping bag and I would go to other part of the plane and sleep there, you know, during the flight. But when you're coming back from India, it's even worse, because it's the same group of people that came in. They bought all the crap, leather bags and bags of leather jackets and gears and goods. And you know, it smell like in prison, like, because these guys don't take shower. They don't have to. I mean, like, they smell bad while they're going in India. When they're coming out of India, they smell even worse. So you like, you light up a couple of incense, but everybody hate incense. They're like, stop incense. I said, guys, you smell like pigs, you know. I like to smell incense. And the cool part of it is plane overload. And they said, they like, we're not supposed to carry. It's about, you know, 25-30% overload. So when plane jump into the hole, it's almost like crashing. And you're flying through Himalayas where like air is like air gaps, and you're like, and you think like, Hare Krishna, like, I'm going to die. Like, you think, you're really thinking like, that's the last time you're flying. You know, so anyway, so there are different experiences of journey. There are different types of journeys for us. So one is a very smooth journey if we, with the right pilot on the right plane going in the right direction. Another journey is not very smooth when, you know, we're trying to do a lot of experimentation. We're sticking with people who have no idea what spiritual life is. And so we're very fortunate because we actually do have that incredible opportunity to be connected with the real spiritual masters. But still, you know, for us to learn how to practice spiritual life, it's almost like Kung Fu. By the way, today we have two Kung Fu masters. Who's going to fight today? Jimuna fight with?
Sundar.
Okay. So the black belt fight with white belt. Do you need any swords or?
So,
okay, so we're going to have, I mean, this is like promotion of the fight. And you can bring some of your RMBs and things, and we're going to have special, who's going to win? I put on black one, a couple of coins, but white one looks very strong. I can put another one. Because it's a new year, and in Russian culture, new year must be drinking, fighting. And falling out the window, ideally from the first floor. Because if you do this, you can survive next New Year. if you didn't fall from the first floor, you know, it may be like your last celebration. I'm talking about some like general people who live in the snow. And you, do you understand? It's like snow, very cold. And there's not much sun. You don't see wintertime a lot of sun. Maybe a couple hours a day if you like it. But more than that, the same as like China. You have your shitty job, you have shitty world, nobody cares about you, and most likely you're going to die quite early before you survive to your retirement. And like, you know, in core of your heart, nothing good is going to happen in your life. Nothing. Well, that's kind of called karma. There's also some people in China like this. They work in a work in factory, they live in the factory, and they're not in Shanghai, they're not in Beijing. They're in some little province town, and you know, all their life they're making teapots or sewing things, and they know nothing's gonna change in their life. They're gonna work, and die. So when I first time I came to Russia, I almost cried when I look at these people. I thought, is there any chance for these people to have different choice in their life, or there's like no chance? I felt the same when I came to China. I came to China first time to Shanghai World Expo. You know, Shanghai World Expo. And I went to Shanghai. And I was in like a good 50-story hotel. But just right by my hotel, like fruit market, you know, like these poor areas where they tear down. Like, you know, common people selling things. And so I went to Shanghai World Expo and I walked all day. And I could not admit to any place because every place was lined thousands and thousands of people. What I saw in Shanghai World Expo was so gigantic to me. I thought, this country is going for technology. There's no way these people have any spiritual interests. Because it was about future and robots and this pavilion and that pavilion. And I was like, oh my God, I've never seen so much technology and so much advancement before, like in this country. Not in America, not in Russia, not in Europe, but in China, all of it together. And hundreds of thousands of people, they stay in one line from another line, like it's like a Soviet Union almost, but like way technologically advanced. I was very frustrated. I was like walking all day, 10 hours, very frustrating, want to come back to my hotel, but then I'm thinking I need to buy some fruits. But I could not barely walk because I walk like, do you understand, like Shanghai World Expo, it's like I walk maybe 50 kilometers from one pavilion to another one. And as soon as I reach one pavilion, the one I want to see, I cannot get in because there's like 1,000 people in line. So I think, oh, let me walk to another one. By the time I get to another one, there's another line, 1,000 people. So all day walking, I only visit a couple of pavilions. And I'm like, I'm thinking, oh my God, it's like, hey. So when I come back to my hotel, finally, I'm not in some gigantic pavilion. I'm a very small Shanghai street where people selling food, selling vegetables, DVDs, you know, like rip-off stuff and like cheap stuff. And like, you know, one RMB, two RMB, like market. And I'm thinking, I need to buy some vegetables and some fruits that I can eat. And suddenly I see one place called Massage. Maybe it's something in English. I'm thinking, there must be some food massage place here and I cannot walk. So I coming into a food massage place in China. And there's like very dirty room, like maybe five people making massage and five people getting massage and a couple of people hanging around and some rice cooker, some food smell, you know, little few trippy pieces of art, like very cheap. And like, you know, massage maybe like, you know, $5 or so, $10, whatever. I think that's okay. You know, I cannot walk. I get my food massage. So I'm coming to this place. I'm getting food massage. And I'm getting my chanting beats. And I start chanting like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Hare. Because my brain is going like crazy. Oh my God, China's so big. Nobody cares about God here at all. It's all about surviving and building this whole giant industry and take over the world. And I'm like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram 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 Ram. And I all close my eyes. And then I realize somebody looking at my face. So when I'm chanting, I open my eyes, I see like five Chinese faces looking at me. And I don't speak one word in Chinese, not even like xie xie or ni hao, like nothing. And I like chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And this, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Hare, Hare, Hare. Oh, and five faces. And these people tell me, like, what are you doing? I'm like, I understand my beats in the bag. And I like, and I pull out my beads from the bag. I say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Like, they're like, show me how you do it. And they're like, and they started doing slow, like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Like, in 20 minutes, we have kirtan, the whole massage place. Honestly, I like, Hare Krishna. And they're like, and they do like this, Hare Krishna. They take spoon and in a glass, and we have kirtan, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And they write this down, the mantra. They write the mantra down, and they feel like, oh my God. Like, I don't, you know, in China, you don't wear a monk dress or anything. You know, I'm just there. And I'm like, oh my God. And then I thought, everything, my total idiot perception of reality, it's like, has nothing to do with reality at all. Krishna showed me that everybody is looking for something real. Not some giant size of building, or, you know, or good kind of car. You know, everybody's, as Govindamar said, heart fulfillment. And when in this small massage place, I chant with five people, and I cannot speak Chinese. I wish I could explain them what it is. But you know what? They got it. They're like, give me like this, I'm giving them like this. And I said, hey, Chai Chen, Hare Krishna. So I understood this is more important than anything else is going on in this world. So it's connecting with the spiritual reality. It's a soul, heart-by-heart transaction. It's what people want in the core of their heart, real spiritual. It doesn't really matter whether they're from Russia and they smell bad, or they're from China and they work a lot, or like from, or they're from America and they got like, you know, hot dog and pizza mixed in their brain, like pizza dogs. And because, you know, like when you go to America, like in China it's sushi. It's like in America they make sushi burger. And they don't put wasabi, they put ketchup, and they think it's cool. Because they like to mix things, and because you know, like everybody came from somewhere. You know, like in America, you can easily eat Chinese Italian pasta, which is taste not like Italian, taste not like Chinese. But somebody's cooking that, and they think, well, you know, we got a lot of Italian people, they love pasta. We also got Chinese, you know, we take the Chinese noodle, put the Italian sauce, mix it up, and you know, something nice coming up, which is, it's called eclectic culture, eclectics. Eclectic means like, yeah, we can take, you know, just like Thai, in Thai culture, you see a lot of eclectic, a lot of from India, a lot of from China, but you can also understand, in the course of time, Thai style become their own. You know, like, if you really, really look at what happened here, you'll see there's a heavy Chinese influence, Asian influence, and it's also heavy South Indian influence. That they, then you can understand. Over the course of time, they developed their own style. Same as in Japan and Korea. You'll find a lot of things came from China to Japan, but because they came from China to Japan, they become totally rethought, and it's finally become a Japanese. So that's why Chinese people, they know, oh, it's not actually Japanese, it came from China, but Japanese redid it in their own style. But when we talk about Krishna consciousness, that's not how you do that. So in Krishna consciousness, you don't really have to take the mantra and change, you know, like, because the Western people thought, well, there are songs in Bengali, let us sing in English. So I was a guru like Kirtananda. You go to a temple and everybody take guitars. Just imagine like Lilavati with the Chinese instrument. And you sing all the songs in Chinese, and it's great, actually. It's great because it's connecting with people. But my question is like, what about depth of that poetry? Can it be very deep? So speaking about deep, incredible stuff, I said today to Goswami Maharaj, I said, you know, because we take some tea and we talk about things. And sometimes we talk about very high things in a very casual way. So we talk about some former, you know, guru who's now, he went back to real life, most like become big real estate developer, make tons of money, but you know, finally, like, he's not really happy, he's frustrated because, like, you know, like, now you're sitting in a very, you know, million-dollar chair, but you're not really, you don't have the heart. So you're still going to devotees, and you want to hear from devotees because that's what makes your life real. And so he wrote, I can highly appreciate after so many years as a very few preachers, Srila Bhakti Sudhir Goswami Maharaj's talks. This guy was like big guru before. He knows philosophy, like big way. But after give up his position of monk and teacher, going for position of like, you know, capitalist and wealthy man, still nothing is there. But I said to Goswami Maharaj, I said, so what was he excited about? I'm wondering, what excited him? And Goswami Maharaj said, like, actually, Mahaprabhu. I said, come on, like, everybody knows Mahaprabhu. He said, well, but what I explained to him is something that comes from Guru Maharaj in our line. Because, see, if we look at the nature of the world, we'll find feminine and masculine presence, like male and female, which is male and female naturally attracted to each other. It's like natural inner draw of these two yin yang, you know, sun and moon and plus and minus energies. But you can understand, Krishna is very beautiful. He's super seductive and he's so attractive that not only all females love him, but we know like the Cupidons, the gods of love, they love him. So in Indian tradition, there's a Cupidon, which is later went to Greece, traveled to Greece, and later traveled to Christians. See, the Christians had no idea of Cupidon, like little Amur angel with the spear who pierced the heart. Actually, it came from Vedic tradition to Greek, and from Greek to European. So otherwise, where this naked, you know, baby archers came from? They came from Indian idea. And when they entered the Greece, the Greek mythology, they also found important presence there. And later, because the Westerners took everything from Greeks, they started drawing them. But who they really are, nobody knows. But there was a very beautiful idea, some cute, beautiful baby kid piercing the arrow because he's playing, you know. But actually, and Cupidon, in the real Cupidon, he also has his wife. And that's his business, to like go with his flower arrow, pierce somebody's heart, and then you're like, oh my God, I love that person. You know, I pierced, there's nothing I can do. So think of this. When Krishna comes to dancing place and curtains open, you know, the Cupidons, they think like, hey, you know, let me like, you know, Cupidons, they have their own thing. Like, who are we going to seduce today? And that one thinking, yeah, I'll take this girl and this guy, and I pierce this one, then I pierce that one, and we'll see what's going to happen. Like, you know, and that's like their inner presence is to seduce. Of course, they have a map. They don't seduce just like anybody. They got a map. Okay, this is Indradyumna Brahmachari on the list. Who do we try? This one? Probably this one. You know, she's an artist. Let's do it. And like, shoo, shoo, shoo. And it's like, ding, ding, ding. Nothing works. I go, like, I'm redeeming the brahmachari. Let me get my brahmachari. And Brahmachari is like, Haribul. I don't really have any more arrows for today. I guess the next time. So that's how it works. It really does work this way because, see, what we say in the Vedic world is antariksha. Like, you know, have any of you see ghosts here? I see them all the time. The ghosts here, especially on our land. There's like two ghosts living here. I don't know, have you seen ghosts? Any devotees saw ghosts?
They're in your room.
Yeah, they're in my room. But I don't see them lately. I think since Giriraj moved here and it's going on, I think they're gone. I don't think they stay. Maybe they actually stay over there, but they used to come like quite often to see me, and I even talk to them. But I'm not like talking to them like in this way. When I sleep, and I like to sleep. You see, when the ghost is, you feel that somebody is looking at you. And you actually want to wake up or open your eyes, but it's not possible. If it's a strong ghost, he holds you like this. But if you open your eyes like this, you know, like you're realizing, then you see them. And because ghosts have mental power, they actually suppress your thinking. Like if they don't want you to like, they can like control your mind. You know, that's what they do. Because they have subtle power. So think of this, like Cupids, who's like very powerful, subtle beings that exist in Antariksha plane, they can pierce heart, but when they, by their fortune, when they see Krishna, they think like, oh. It's like, he's so beautiful. He's so beautiful, I drop all my arrows. Like, I drop my bow. I look at him, and I think he's so charming, he's so seductive, then I forgot about everything. That's what happened to different beings when they meet Krishna. And you know, the Cupids, they're very artistic persons, like they can value art. If demons see Krishna, actually they have different result. So demons would never think, oh, he's so beautiful. Demons think like, oh my God, like, you know, this guy is like, he looks different. Should I kill him? Because that's demonic principle. So just to see Krishna, you have to be very blessed. Because demons, even when they see Krishna in their own way, they don't have that reaction. So that's why it says in scriptures, you actually cannot see Krishna with your direct physical eyes. You can only see Krishna through the mirror of your heart, where soul exists. In other words, if Krishna wants to reveal himself to you, you can see it. If you cannot, Krishna cannot reveal, you cannot see. So Krishna is super beautiful, but still, in his definition, he has a male aspect. Although he does not look like, you don't see Krishna with beard, like, or like fat Krishna with beard, like. That would be more like Avadhut Maharaj, but not Krishna. Or like, you don't see like, bowl-headed Krishna, like he lost his hair. No, Krishna always in his most incredible age, like 16-year-old, like the youth, fresh youth, first love, this position. But still, he's male, you know, like you can understand there's a little bit male presence within him. Although he's so beautiful, but you don't think he's like, he's a girl. He can dress as a girl. He appears to be as a girl. Many times he does that when he's trying to bewilder Radharani. He appears to her as a girlfriend. Then Radharani, she's like crying, and she starts chastising Krishna. And Krishna appears in a female form to Radharani. And he's very supportive to chastise Krishna. Like Radharani say, I really can't stand him anymore. Krishna say, yes, you're right. And then Radharani finally admitted, he said, you're such a dear to me. It sounds like you're second part of my half. You're sharing my heart completely. And Krishna, the female force, he goes, yes, I'm like that. So, you know, it's Krishna's trick. So he can be totally invisible. But when Krishna sees Radharani, the same thing that everybody fainted happened to Krishna. Just imagine. He's incredibly beautiful, but when he sees Radharani, he's so much bewildered that he's dropping his arrows. Because Krishna knows, like, I can charm anybody. If I just want to charm anybody, you know, like Krishna, like, he can charm you in a second. If he likes you, he can attract you in a second. But you think, who is this beautiful female? Who is this beautiful female that is so sweet and so incredibly beautiful that I'm charmed by? She has to be known less than my second self. Because nothing else is more attractive to me than myself, but she's my female self aspect. So therefore it says, Radha Krishna Vikritir Hladini Shakti Asmat, then male and female, they're always searching for union, and sometimes they separate to enjoy himself, and sometimes by love, they get like magnets, become one, irresistibly drawing to one another. And this is eternal process. And it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that one male and female mix as one identity, become Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He sucked all the Krishna's beauty and all the Radharani's beauty. And when you think, so this is something incredible. So when that guru, he heard that time of explanation of Goswami Maharaj, and I'm sure it was even deeper and deeper explanation, he was like totally struck with his heart. Because at a certain point we say, oh, Krishna is the most beautiful being. Oh, Radharani is most beautiful. But Mahaprabhu, it's combination. And through that unique combination, it makes also accessibility. Because Krishna himself, unapproachable, Radharani, unapproachable. There's no way to approach. But when it becomes Mahaprabhu, it's approachable. That's where Hare Krishna Mahamantra coming. This unique combination of beauty, masculine and female aspect. So something like that, we have to think how fortunate we are to even hear about these things. Like when I first time read Bhagavad Gita, you know, my first question was, now I understand that God exists, but my question is, why is it he's revealing to me? I'm not the best guy. And I've seen there's so many better people than myself, but why is that revealing to me? And my other things, why other people can't understand it? The answer is this. It is Krishna's will. He wants you to show himself. He will. In a second, he will charm your heart. If he's chosen not to appear, he can like appear and disappear. You know, he's a personality. He's a person, just like you. You know, you don't know why you're talking to somebody friendly. Hey, hello, how are you? Or, you know, like, oh, okay, I don't want to talk. But Krishna is like incredible. So that's why when I went to China to Buddhist shop, I liked some, you know, in China some Buddhist shops, they're beautiful, beautiful things which you can use for temple. So I went for this Buddhist shop and I see there's one, have you seen Buddha with stand with finger like this? Have you seen in China? There's Buddha with one hand like this. You see that?
Yeah.
I was shocked because Buddha is Vishnu. But I was shocked. I've seen him as Mahaprabhu. Do you understand that? Buddha with one finger. Buddha and Krishna and Vishnu the same. But to me, I was like, oh my God, what is that? Like, is that like Mahaprabhu? And I asked, who is this? They said, oh, it's Buddha holding one finger. Happy Buddha, dancing Buddha, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Bol. And I thought, well, it's incredible. Everything is already there. But most like, you need to have a different perception, different way to see things. And this different way to see things will come through the concept. And cool thing about, because today's Chinese New Year, we know the importance of Chinese culture is Chinese people revere knowledge. So in a Chinese book about Tripalaka, what is that book, Tripalaka book? They know this book? Or they don't know?
No, everyone knows.
Oh, everyone knows, right? What is this book about? It's about monk, Buddhist monk, who went to India and he died many times on the way until he met monkey who should be like, I guess, Hanuman or something. And that monkey helped him. So think of this, it's a beautiful idea that means on the way to knowledge, you're supposed to die many times. It's not an easy journey. And the help will come to you. But he's been traveling to India, to ancient India, to receive the knowledge. So there's Kumbh Mela right now, the festival of Kumbh Mela, which hopefully I'm going to go to. again, it's already third time. If this life I'll be there like third time, I consider, hey, it's already been like 30 years by when since first time I went there. And I know the place, like, I really do. Because last time we stayed there 60 days. So we kind of learned the whole thing about the place. But a cool part is when I went to Haridwar Kumbh Mela, I studied that history. And they would say, quite often, this festival would be visited by Chinese pilgrims. They would come to Tibet, through Himalayas. Because if you look at the China, it's very easy to come to Tibet. But it's like very, very dangerous journey. Coming to China from all these mountains and or Nepal, you know. So historically, Chinese would always travel to India. But what is the important part is they would travel to get the knowledge. And as they would collect the knowledge there, you know, they would very carefully save all the sutras, and they create their own Sanskrit with Chinese characters. It's a whole transformational thing. But they all, I mean, historically, spiritually, they know that India is a place of knowledge. You want the knowledge, you have to go to India. And everything came from India spiritually. And of course, we know that Paramananda knows more, but ancient Chinese kingdoms, they were Vedic kingdoms, and some of the great, like Doina Rishi and other gurus in India were Chinese. That's another interesting thing. Chinese would come to India and they would achieve highest position. Like Doina Rishi was Chinese. Why he was so high position? Because he was a Kula guru of Pandavas, the kings. Obviously, when you're coming from elsewhere and you know you're showing your educational skills, just like when I ask one musician, why the musicians from New Jersey always playing the musicians from New York? And they say, because you're from, you know, if you're from New York, you have big ego. But if you're from New Jersey, you practice better. So then the Jersey musicians, they're the best jazz players because they think, hey, I got to be good because I'm going to play in New York. So going to all this history of the world, we can say that. And the reason I'm telling this is because we have a bunch of Chinese guests today. It's Chinese New Year. We have to admire Chinese culture and get connections to that knowledge that you're coming here to get for. And don't hesitate to come here because you don't get it in China. You give it away in China, but you get it here. Connecting with the guru, Vaishnavas. And this is like a new year. This is something like new, something great, something that you think, hey, this year I connect with devotees. I'll try to practice more. I try to come back here. But one important thing is about all these things, like I spoke today with Goswami Maharaj. He also told me, I said, is there any hope for me? And Goswami Maharaj said, I don't really want to get any more stuff for free. My guru gave me so much wisdom that in order for me to repay that, maybe I have to like serve thousands of lives. But like, if I just get like some more stuff for free, okay, guru give you more knowledge. Okay, take more knowledge. That's not what you really want. You learn how to appreciate. See, that's about being a great pilot. It's not like you learn new technique every day. It's like, you already appreciate that. You learn how to fly. You learn how to do it intuitively. But we begin the story that you're like proclaiming yourself as an intuitive pilot. It's all bullshit. But you know, like maybe after 50 years, you kind of can do it a little bit of intuitively. You still watch at the, you know, radar and like, you know, when you're landing and taking off. But still, it's within you. It's like part of you. So speaking about Kung Fu, which we're going to look at the fight today, this is the winner prize. So we hope that you Kung Fu. See, Kung Fu is not how you beat somebody. That's not Kung Fu. Kung Fu, it's the way you think, you move, and you cannot actually be Kung Fu 5 minutes a day. No. You practice Kung Fu all the time. And when you become Kung Fu, means you practice Kung Fu, you become Kung Fu, that become inseparable of you, you become Kung Fu master. Otherwise, if you just copy the gestures of Kung Fu or like eat like Kung Fu Panda or, you know, wear the Kung Fu dress, which is very easy to put it on, you know, it's not that expensive nowadays. Thank God for the industry. But you don't actually become Kung Fu master. So what is the difference between amateur and master? Amateur thinking he knows everything. The master learning all the time. The master are fulfilled through his process. And amateur expecting results. Master is not expecting results. Because you are the process. You are the result. It's not like you're inspiring. As deeper you're going, it's better you become. But that's not what you're expecting. You're not expecting perfection. Because you perfection yourself. And it's not a very speculative thing. It's the true feeling of devotee. When what devotee does, he's expecting more deeper engagement, more service, more realization, more opportunities. Devotee is not thinking like, oh, I've learned everything. It's too boring. I know everything about Krishna consciousness, you know. No, it doesn't work. It's infinite. So you can start fighting now.